So tonight we're going to start with a part of Java which deals with the fact that it's an object-oriented language. And so I want to talk about how objects are implemented in Java. In Java, as in other object-oriented languages, when you write a program and you want to structure it by dividing it up into modules, unlike a procedural language where you're used to dividing up the program into units of computation, like subroutines, that all are part of one program, in object-oriented languages, you break the program up into modules which have not only computation associated with them, but units of data, so that you have modules which have variables which can hold data objects. These are called instance variables, and they are declared as variables in the class. And they also have functions or subroutines that can operate on objects of those on those data objects. And the functions are usually called methods, and they are in Java. So you might think of it as not just breaking up the program into chunks of computation, but breaking up the program into sets of behaviors. You know, what are the significant ideas in your program? What are the significant collections of objects in your program? You can divide up the program with respect to those objects, introduce instance variables to hold the data for those objects, and then have the methods, which are functions that define how those objects behave. So the class definition is like a template that defines those behaviors. So you can then declare variables to be of that type, the types of that class, and each time you introduce a variable and create it to be an object of that class, it's a new instance. That is, you might have a class which is to represent employees in the company. And you might have as instance variables things like the name of the employee, their social security number, what their salary is. Then you might have methods for increasing the salary or other fun things that has to do with employees. Then you could introduce different instances, employee George, and he would have a set of variables, the instance variables created for him that would hold his name and his social security number. Then you could introduce another employee, Mary, and she would have another instance and would have a set of variables to hold all her data. So you write classes and they are like a template, then you can declare and create objects, different instances of that class. Now, one of the things that these types of classes are used for is called data encapsulation, which is that when you have the instance variables that hold the data of each instance of the class, you don't have to make the values of those instance variables available to other programs outside the class. And that hides the data from programs outside the class. In the case of the employees, for example, you might not want people that declare a class for George and that declare instances George and Mary to directly assign new values to the salary field. Maybe you only want them to use a special method that you have that checks and makes sure that people aren't assigning exorbitant salaries to different employees or something. So instead of allowing people to directly assign and access variables to hold the data of the class, you can write methods that are going to do that, and then you can control to a certain extent how they access those variables and hide details of the data representation from other programs which use the class. Now, one of the ways in which this is different from procedure-oriented programming, which you're used to if you program in a language like C or Fortran, is that in those cases when you write a subroutine, you usually write it to be used in a particular program. I mean, there are cases where you write libraries of subroutines which can be used over wide classes of programs, But in general, you write sort of self-contained programs that are broken up into modules. In the object-oriented view, when you write classes, it may very well be that you think of it more as a standalone module which can be used by other programs as necessary. So you need to have a definition of how to use that module, that class, and that's sometimes called the API, the Application Programming Interface, and what that interface will tell to other people who want to declare and to create instances of this class is what are the variables that they can access, because sometimes you do allow people to access variables. Sometimes you hide them for data encapsulation. And what are the methods that the other programmers can use to operate on objects of this class? And the instance variables and the methods that other people are allowed to use when they create objects of this class are created with a keyword called public. So here's an example of part of the interface for a class called date, which actually exists in the Java language. It's a public class, so other people can use it. And it actually, in its own definition, it has a bunch of instance variables, but they are all kept private. None of them are made public, so the instance variables are not part of this API. This is the public interface. But there are a set of methods that people can use to operate on things of class date. And the way that you create instances of a class date is that you call special methods called constructors, which have the same name as the class. So here's two constructors. They're both called dates, and that's okay. You are allowed to have more than one constructor, and they are different because they have different numbers and types of arguments that are allowed. They will behave the same in that they will create an instance of the class date. And in fact, the constructor date without any arguments constructs a date which whose value is the current date and current time. On the other hand, you can call this constructor, which will construct a date with any year, month, and day which you give it. So you can use these two constructors to construct different kinds of dates. Once you've created a date, how do you use it? Well, you're allowed to use a whole list of other methods, and I've only listed a few of them here. Some of them do things like access the data. So, for example, if you have a variable that you've created, which is a date, you can say get hours and get back the hour part of that date, or you can say get year or get month and so on. If you want to change the date or change parts of the date, you also have a set of methods to do that. These are called the mutator methods. So there's a set of methods like set hour, set year, set month, which allow you to change parts of the date. So even though you can't access the instance variables directly, which hold the value of the date, there's a set of methods supplied to you that allow you to change pieces and to get at pieces. There are other public methods. An example is a method called after, which if you give it another date as an argument, will compute if that date falls after the date that's the instance of this class and give a Boolean result, true or false, depending on whether that's true or false. So notice that this is just the public interface for how people use this class. In the actual class definition of the Java date class, there is a whole set of instance variables which are not made public, which keep the year, the month, the day, the hours, the seconds of each date which is created. There may be other methods which are also not made public, which are just kind of helper subroutines used internally in the module. So how do you use a class like the class called Dates? If you have a program in which you want to have various dates, then you can declare variables of type date, and here is the syntax. If today is a variable name, you just say today, and you give date on the left-hand side. And this is true of declaring variables of any type, any class. Any class name behaves as a type, and you can use it on the left-hand side of a declaration to declare a variable to have that type. And it declares that that variable is going to be an instance of that class. Now, when you do this variable declaration, you haven't yet created the instance. That's a separate operation in which you use the keyword new followed by the name of the constructor. So to create a date, you say, to create an instance of the class date, you say new date, and then you give whichever arguments you want depending on which constructor you want to have executed. Now you can put those together, and I'm going to show you that in, here's a little teeny class that's going to use the date class. So the class, this class is called date application. It has a main function. Notice that the first statement here combines the declaration of the variable today to be of type date, and also with this equal sign assigns it to be this new date that's constructed here. So you can combine the variable declaration and the construction, but you don't have to. There are cases where you don't want to do that. But that's the first statement of the program, is to declare the date and to create a new one. And with this constructor, as I said, the default is if you don't give any arguments, you get today's date. Now the second statement here, I've introduced another variable which I called medieval, which is also of type date, and I create a new one by calling the date constructor with the year 1400, December 25th. So note that I have here two instances of the class date. So there will be created two sets of instance variables that are going to keep track of the values of these two dates. And I could, of course, create many more. Now I just wanted to show you an example of calling a method. So I can call any of the methods in the class, but I have to say which instance of the class I want that method to operate on. And to do that, I use this dot notation, so I can say, use the date that's in the variable today, dot, and I can use any of those methods, like get month or set hours. In this case, I'm using the method called after. So I say today.after, and it's going to call the method after with respect to the particular instance of the date class called today. And what that does is it also takes an argument, which is another date, in this case medieval, and it compares to see if the date represented by the variable today falls after in time the date represented by the variable medieval. Okay? This is a very quick overview of object-oriented programming, I realize. So you may have noticed that in the class date application, really there was only one thing, a main function, and that is an example of a class that was introduced just to do a particular computation. So in addition to introducing classes to represent data and the methods that are going to operate on them, you quite often, in object-oriented programming, when you want to write a program where there's just going to be one instance of the program, you also put it as a class. And you might call that a computational class. It's one which is only intended to have one instance. And I'm not quite sure why this entire image didn't load. So by the way, did you all pick up copies of the handouts up here? So you have hard copy of this. I don't want to click the reload because last time I did something unusual I crashed the whole thing. So let's just pretend that we can read that. You have your own copy. So this is another example, a class called Count, which all it does is has one, it's an example of a Java application. It just has one method called main, and it's there because it's going to do one computational instance. In this case, I believe what it does, I can't quite read it, is to read input until you get to a minus one, read characters, and count the number of characters that are read. So those are the programming building blocks that you use in an object-oriented language. They're all classes. When you want to write a program, you put it in a class that has, you know, a computational body. When you want to have data objects, you create a class which has instance variables to represent that data and methods, which are functions to work on them. So now let me say another word about some of the detail about making a class definition. When you give a class definition, here is the syntax down on this third bullet. You give the keyword class. In front of it, you put any number of class modifiers, which may be other keywords. You give a name to the class. This is one you make up. Then optionally, you can put that your class is going to be a subclass of some other class, and we'll talk more about that later. If so, you say extends, but give the keyword extends, and give the name of the class that's going to be the parent of the class you're defining. And sometimes this is called the superclass, the parent class of the class you're defining. And you may also put that the class you're defining implements an interface. And again, we'll talk more about that later. Now, if you're familiar with C++, you may know that when you define a class, you can make it be a subclass. You can make it have more than one parent. And this is called multiple inheritance. This is not allowed in Java. In Java, you're only allowed to have single inheritance. You're only allowed to have one parent. And this solves a lot of the problems that C++ has with various kinds of class casting and coercion. But sometimes you do want to create a class which inherits behaviors from more than one parent. You may want it to be be a subclass of the class applet. You may also want it to be a subclass of the class thread, for example, if you want it to have threads. So the way that Java handles this is that there is this notion called interface, which specifies essentially the API of some parent classes that you might want your class to also have behavior of. But it doesn't specify sort of what are the, it doesn't give the bodies of any of those functions. It only gives the interface, you know, the declarations of the instance variables and the methods that are going to be used. And I'll show you later how that works out so that you can, in fact, define classes which are going to behave like different parent classes but really only extend one parent class in the subclass relationship. Now, when you define a class, as I pointed out in the date example, you need to give a constructor method. They have the same name as the class that you're defining, and you can have more than one constructor method with different numbers and types of arguments, and that's called overloading. If you're allowed to have two different methods that have the same name, that's called overloading, and you're allowed to do that. And the compiler can always tell which of those two methods you're trying to call, because they are required to have different numbers or different types of arguments. Java is a strongly typed language. You have to declare the type of every variable, as I mentioned last time, so that when you call a method like the constructor of a class, the Java knows what are the types of the arguments that you use. So I mentioned that when you define a class, you have class modifiers that you can give, and here are some of them. I'm not going to go over details of all of them. One of the possible things is that you say that the class is abstract, and this is what you want when essentially you want to define a set of behaviors, define the API without giving the bodies of the methods. What you're expecting is that this is going to be a parent class that nobody actually ever creates any instances of, but it's a place to put definitions of methods that all the subclasses are actually going to implement. So that's what an abstract class would be. These other class modifiers have to do with sort of the scope rules. You define a class, other programs may want to use it, but there's a set of rules about which classes other programs can use, and that depends on these class modifiers that you put. If you put public, anybody else can use the class that you're defining. You may be defining a class that you only want to be used by your program. In that case, you may want it to not to put a class modifier, which means that all of the classes that you're defining within the same directory can use it, or you may want to say private, which is only the classes within the same file can use it. There are some other class modifiers which probably aren't going to come up in the kinds of Java programming which we're going to do, so I won't go over them. Now, within the class definition, you're also going to declare a number of instance variables and a number of methods. And essentially, we talked about how to declare variables, so I don't need to go over that. Here is the syntax for declaring methods. That is, you have a set of method modifiers as well. You have a return type. You give the name of the method, and then you give the argument list in which you give the name of the argument and the type that it has for each one. You give the argument type first and then the name of the argument. So return types can be any type. That includes primitive types like int and bytes and arrays, as well as class names. So you can return any object for any class that's declared to be of any class type as the result of a method. The method modifiers also have some of these keywords like public, protected, private, which again govern who can call this method and what is its access. And again, public is what makes this method accessible to anybody from another program that wants to use a method in this class. Let me just mention synchronize. We'll be talking more about that later when we talk about multi-threading, but this is one of the keywords that you use to make sure that the body of the method can only be executed by one thread if you have concurrent execution. So now we want to talk about what are the relationships between classes. And as I already mentioned there, one of the relationships is that of a subclass relationship, and that is called inheritance in the object-oriented terminology. And traditionally, object-oriented people say that there's three types of relationship between classes. The first two, well, the second one is really just a special case. So the first one, so let me concentrate on it, and that's the relationship of use. So if you've declared a class with a bunch of public instance variables and methods, then some other class can declare an instance of that and use those methods, and that's a case of class A using class B. Then inheritance is that class B is a subclass of A. So B extends class A, or is a subclass of A, if it has all the variables and instances that A has, plus it may have more. So this is a kind of specialization. If you declare a class which you're intended to be a parent class, it will have all the instance variables and methods that a group of classes may have in common. Then you can define subclasses which will have those instances, those variables and methods, but in addition they may add more. And in fact, you don't have to repeat the definitions of instance variables and methods in a subclass. It's assumed that you will inherit all of the instance variables and methods that are in the parent. So remember that you, from the previous slides, that you, when you want to define a subclass, you say that it extends another class, and then that other class is its parent, and you, in fact, will inherit all the... It's as if you repeated the declarations of all the instance variables and methods from the parent class. You don't have to repeat them. You just get them automatically. So how does this work, that you can have a subclass that inherits instance variables and methods from a parent? Let's just concentrate on methods for now. So here is a situation in which there's a whole class hierarchy defined. Up at the top we have the parent class, and it may have some instance variables and methods defined. In particular, there's one method here. So every class which is a subclass of this is assumed to have a method of that name. So for example, over here, every subclass of this parent class is assumed to have a method of that name. It doesn't have to define it. Okay? So if you have some other class unrelated to this whole class hierarchy, it can declare, so suppose, for example, over here, this class at the bottom was that date class that we had as an example. Some other program, some other class can create a date object and declare it, in which case it's created something over here that's represented by the name object 2. It's an instance of this class. And it can say whatever the name, so object 2 dot the name of a method which can be defined either in the subclass or any of the classes above it as in the parent hierarchy. In particular, suppose that this object calls on object 2 the name of a method that's only in the parent class. What happens is that the Java interpreter will go to this object to look for a method of that name, or the Java compiler, excuse me. There's not actually a definition of a method of that name in this class, but it knows that this class has a parent, so it goes there to look. If it's not there, it will go up here and look, and it will find the method of that name. Why is it okay to call this method on object 2 down here? It's okay because not only does object 2 have all the methods, but it has all the instance variables that the parent did. So imagine that this method is operating on instance variables declared in the parent class, but those variables are assumed to be declared down here as well, and so it's fine to call that method, and it will work on all those instance variables. Yes, to look for methods of a particular name. Okay? So that's sort of simple inheritance. Another thing that is useful to do is sometimes you may want the subclass not to inherit exactly the method of that name that was in the parent, but to create its own, to have slightly more specialized version of that method, perhaps. So a subclass of a parent is allowed to have another definition.